What are these ways we can inject more flexibility in your supply chain, being able to print on demand instead of ordering off the shelf parts? What happens when your design changes and you need to make a quick adjustment? These are all reasons that would lead someone more towards additive manufacturing.
Welcome to Manufacturing Happy Hour, the podcast where we get real about the latest trends and technologies impacting modern manufacturers.
Manufacturing
Happy Hour. Each week, we interview industry experts that are at the top of their craft and give you the tools, tactics, and strategies you need to take your career and your business to the next level. And now, your host, Chris Lukey.
Hey, what's up? It's episode 182. We're talking about robotics and automation in additive manufacturing. You know, it's been a while since we've talked about 3D printing on this show, so it was time to fix that. We are bringing Liz Stortstrom, who is a 3D printing product manager at Hewlett-Packard, on the show today. Now, Liz has been at HP for a while. She's been in 3D printing for a while, but that's not all we're going to talk about in this episode. So here are three things you can expect. First, obviously, we're going to hear about Liz's story. We've got a fun little way to kick this interview off. And then we're going to get into additive manufacturing for robotics and automation, as the episode title suggests. And then third, we're going to talk about what applications in the industry right now are prime for additive manufacturing. As always, if you want to learn more, make sure to go to the show notes page at manufacturinghappyhour.com/182. And before we jump in, I do want to give a shout out to the Automate Show, which is coming up very, very quickly on May 6th through 9th, 2024. If you're listening to it at this time, if you want to get registered for that, go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024. You know, this is actually how I got connected with Liz. You're going to hear a little bit about that at the end of the conversation today after the interview's done. But hey, first, a couple things about Automate 2024. First of all, I mentioned the dates. It's in Chicago, May 6th through 9th. I'm going to be there as part of the Automate Live crew doing interviews all week long. If you want to be part of those, there is still time to get signed up. You can do that over at the Automate website. And then the other thing I want to share, this probably shouldn't come as a surprise, but there is going to be a Manufacturing Happy Hour event taking place the evening of Tuesday, May 7th. At the Guinness Open Gate Brewery in Chicago's West Loop. This is a new spot. I'm doing this event in conjunction with Jake Hall, the manufacturing millennial, as well as a couple excellent sponsors, Harding, as well as Gray Solutions. You hear about both of them on this podcast. But that's going to be awesome. It's going from 7 to 10 p.m. We hope to see you there to grab a pint. Again, register for Automate. It's free to register for Automate. Go to manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024, and we will see you in Chicago very soon. But first, we got to take a little trip to Portland, Oregon to start today's conversation. It's time that we meet up with Liz Stortstrom. All right, Liz, this is going to be a particularly fun question for you because you mentioned you spent basically the last 15 years living over in Portland, Oregon, and now you're over in Spain. So I'm very excited to ask you the question. If we were having this conversation over a beverage today, where would that be?
Oh, I love this question. I have many options coming from Portland, Oregon. I think I would either have to go for somewhere like Victoria Bar that has a little bit of an old-timey vibe. You can get a really nice craft cocktail and find a little corner to chat in. Or maybe something a little bit quirkier, a little bit divier, like Roadside Attraction, which is near and dear to my heart, with lots of funky things, quirky decorations outside. So whatever you would prefer, I'm down.
I need to do a bit more exploration into the cocktail and dive bar scene in Portland, admittedly, because I mentioned before the interview, I used to host an East Side brewery crawl over there. So I know the beer scene pretty well, but I think the extent of my cocktail knowledge extends to a place called, is it Pepe Le Moco? It's like a downtown craft cocktail bar.
It's in a basement. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. Well, we're hanging out. I love a dive bar, by the way. Dive bars are my favorite. So let's say we're hanging out at Roadside Attraction. You know, when someone asks you what you do as a product manager in 3D printing, additive manufacturing at HP, how do you describe that as if you're having a Rainier beer with them at a dive
a
bar?
A Rainier, yes.
Is that how you say it? Is that the fancy way?
if we want to be fancy about it, but no, great question. So many things. So as a product manager, I work with so many different people now, right? All different disciplines. And essentially, what I'm trying to do is make sure that we have clear product definitions and that we're meeting the objectives, right? And then delivering that product to the market. So that's pretty broad, and hence why I work with a lot of different people, anyone from sales, R&D, marketing, right? So really making sure that from a business perspective, the products that we're working on make sense.
Excellent. Well, I'm going to ask you a bit more about that as we get further into the conversation. I do want to hear a bit about your story that took you, you know, not only overseas most recently, but we're going to go back even further in that. You're in additive manufacturing now, but you started your career with, at least from my glance, more traditional engineering roles with Ford, Intel, etc. Did you have a vision for what you wanted to do as an engineer early in your career?
Absolutely not. So to be perfectly honest, I am someone with a lot of interests. I have a lot of diverse interests, and my career has not been a straight path, for sure. I think it started pretty typically where I had a lot of interest in math and science, and I thought, okay, I really feel like I want to get involved with making something. So I went in the direction of mechanical engineering, right? But even within that, I think I bounced around from more of an interest in astronomy and astrophysics and aeronautics, and then over to sustainability. So really, for me, I think I've learned over the years that more I'm interested in learning and solving challenging problems, right? And there's a lot of things that within that could interest me, right?
So then that took you through a number of roles, your internships, you're starting your full-time career at Intel. How did you know, maybe tell us how you made the transition to additive manufacturing at HP, and any backstory before that as well? Because I believe you jumped over to HP in a different role prior to your more 3D printing focus.
Exactly. So I actually started my first role in an operations role at Intel, and pretty quickly learned that that wasn't for me. But luckily, I was able to move over to more of a design, mechanical design engineering role within Intel. And from there, I got to that point where I was like, there's really not a lot I'm learning anymore. And then I found my way to HP 3D printing. And at the time, I was only just finding out that HP was getting into 3D printing. I didn't know that before. But I found my way into a role where I was doing also mechanical design engineering, and immediately was hooked, right? I entered this environment where there was all of this development going on, all of this innovation going on, you know, a diverse group of people working on really challenging problems. And it was just a super exciting environment to join into, right? So that's kind of what hooked me into additive manufacturing in the first place.
Okay, well, I've got a couple questions here then. So what can you share the story of how you realized operations wasn't your thing and you needed to go more the design route? Because for the folks listening out there, I've found myself in this position in my career before as well. You find yourself, you're trying something new, but you're like, this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. Can you share a little bit about how you realized that wasn't your path, but you had a pretty good feeling something more design oriented was going to be the right way to go?
Right. And It's a great question, and I wish I had a better answer, but I feel like at the end of the day, it comes down to a gut feeling, really. And, you know, one thing I would say is that there's a difference in the type of work you're doing, right? So in an operations role, essentially your job, at least, you know, for me, it was making sure that this equipment is running 24/7, that everything's operational, maybe making kind of small gradual improvements on the existing operations over time. Whereas I think personally, I find it more exciting to have a specific problem you're trying to solve. And then everyone's trying to solve that one kind of challenging problem at the same time. And maybe there's some more innovation happening to try to address that problem. So for me, it felt a little bit like in the operations role, there was a lot of room for failure, but not a lot of room for excitement and innovation, whereas I found more of that on the design side. But I think it really depends on the environment as well.
100%. And I like your answer at the start where you said, hey, it's a gut feel, right? Yeah, like there's only so much analysis you can put in it, but you knew deep down the direction you wanted to go. Maybe a more tangible question that I also wanted to ask was, you mentioned your jump from Intel to HP, and this is a perfectly natural spot for anyone to end up in their career. You felt like you had stopped learning in the role you were in, and you were ready to, or maybe it had leveled out, maybe the better way to describe it, right? But
right.
Tell us, you know, maybe one, how you realized that you were hitting a point of diminishing returns, and also maybe some of the things you did to try to keep learning to power through it before you said, hey, I think it's time to try something different. And the reason I ask this is everyone, I think, out there, again, is in a position, finds themselves at some point in their career trying to figure out what's the next thing. They realize maybe they've peaked in their current role in terms mm-hmm. of what they can learn. I'm curious to hear how that felt as well.
For me, and specifically, I was doing more laptop design. And I remember very clearly my manager at the time, towards the end of my tenure there, saying, okay, what do you want to own next, right? Like, what aspects of this computer design? And I was thinking back, and I remember thinking, well, at this point, I've owned every piece of a computer. I know how to design everything in a computer now, and there's really not something that I want to go back and redo. So that's when I was really feeling like, okay, maybe I'm reaching the end of my time in this group. But to your second point, there is always a way to keep things interesting or to keep learning, right? There's always more to learn, for sure. That's always true. So for me, it turned more into doing more of the overall architecture of the design rather than just owning a subsystem, right? So looking at how I could kind of advance the type of design work I was doing and looking at it from a broader high-level perspective.
And I like how you've talked about how you've been able to keep those roles fresh, I believe was the exact word you said right. as well. My question then is, so we end your let's end your Intel portion of your career on a positive note. Then what's something you learned from Intel that has helped you in your role in, let's say, additive manufacturing at HP today? A lesson that stuck with you?
And actually, this is huge, because the biggest lesson that I learned is that you can always take something you learned from a previous role into your next role. Always. And so even though maybe I left each of those jobs thinking, well, maybe I'm not going to use those skills again, or, well, maybe that wasn't that useful. But in the end, in my first role, I learned about manufacturing, right? I got to witness firsthand an extremely advanced manufacturing environment. So now in additive, when I talk to customers, when I talk to people trying to get into additive manufacturing, I have that context to say, okay, this is what, you know, actual high-level manufacturing can look like. And maybe this is where you are, and these are the steps you can take to get there. So that was actually hugely beneficial. And then similarly, in the design role, I mean, I learned all about how to design for different manufacturing processes, you know, design rules and just practical design experience. And all of that has directly helped with my understanding of how end users of additive manufacturing can design for additively manufactured parts.
All right. I love the foundational learnings you've referenced in these conversations so far.
We'll be back in a moment, but first, a quick word from our sponsor. Gray Solutions is a systems integrator that you've probably heard me talk about on this show before. Maybe you heard our interview with their CEO, Walker Maddox, or maybe you've heard us talk about how the term systems integrator isn't even a term that fully encompasses who they are. Well, that's what I'm here to talk about. Of everything that Gray Solutions does, they are ahead of their time when it comes to helping manufacturers commission new facilities and new lines with confidence. That's because their 3D modeling capabilities are basically like having a crystal ball. If you want to peer into the future of your facility or process upgrade long before you invest, well, then you should definitely check out episode 171, where we interview Gray Solutions VP of Cool Stuff, Greg Powers. Yes, that's his actual title. That's where you'll hear about their unique approach to 3D modeling. While every other company is throwing the term artificial intelligence around with no context, you'll hear how Gray Solutions is using it to provide hyper-accurate 3D models that help manufacturers revolutionize their business. ManufacturingHappyHour.com/171 will take you right there. So hey, commission with confidence. Pick a partner with a proven track record of project success that's always investing in new, innovative ways to get your projects done faster and better. Check out Gray Solutions on this podcast or at graysolutions.com. And now back to today's episode.
We're going to jump to the next part of our conversation. We're going to finish our Rainiers at Roadside Attraction. We're going to head down the road to Victoria Bar to get some cocktails. So perfect. We're going to talk more. We're going to talk more about the state of additive manufacturing at this point. And I was listening to another interview that you did where you were a speaker at the Automate conference last year in Detroit, Michigan. It's in Chicago this year in 2024. But I believe you said you went into that with two goals. You wanted to expose yourself to the broader automation world, and you wanted to educate folks on how to use additive manufacturing in a pragmatic sense. So let's start with the second one. How are additive manufacturing operations leveraging automation today? Answer this as if we're having those cocktails at Victoria Bar.
Well, the first answer is they're starting to. My second answer is they should do more of it.
Okay.
And that's okay. The direction that the industry is really going. So you'll notice that when you look at a lot of the big additive manufacturing companies, they are looking at ways to make their processes more efficient, faster, more cost-effective. And what's a good way to do that? Through automation, right? So, HP, for example, released two new products this last year around powder handling automation and also around build unit exchange automation, for example. But that's only one piece of the puzzle. And really, you have to think about the full end-to-end workflow, right? So when you're creating a 3D printed part, it's not just 3D printing, but it also includes design, build design, then printing, then a lot of times cleaning the parts and some sort of post-processing. So the question is, how do we make that whole end-to-end process more streamlined so you can make it more cost-effective? Because really the big question hanging on the additive manufacturing industry's mind is how do we be more competitive so that we can increase adoption, right? Because it's still, while it's exciting and it's starting to gain ground, it's maybe not moving as quickly as a lot of people thought it would be.
How can they be more competitive then in that case? I'd love to hear this from your perspective also, because that is a lingering question many are facing. It's like, what are ways that we can leverage this new technology in a way that makes sense?
Yeah, well, for additive manufacturers, for sure, I 100% recommend looking at automation options, right? And there are a lot of different options, right? It obviously depends on what technology you're using, what post-processing you need, but really looking at that full end-to-end workflow. I'd also add that the other interesting side outside of the hardware is the software side, right? Because that's the first barrier to even, you know, getting to 3D printing. How do I design a part for 3D printing? And how do I design a build or a file for that printer? And so the really cool thing happening now are some automation techniques for streamlining that digital workflow. There's actually a really good example. There was an NVIDIA conference on AI recently, and HP and Shutterstock were there, and they were showcasing at the booth live, like a text to 3D modeling feature, right? Where basically anyone could come up to the booth, say, you know, type in, I want a dragon. And then the next day they would have a 3D printed dragon on the table to show them. So for me, that's one of the coolest things that's really going to break down some barriers from getting people's ideas to an actual finished part.
So that feeds into my next question then. You know, thinking back to 2023 at the Automate show, you also wanted to expose yourself to the broader automation world. So what's an automation advancement that you've seen impact additive manufacturing within the last year? That feels like one example. Maybe the way to describe this is how is it impacting manufacturing on like an industrial scale versus like here's a dragon from, you know, the next day at the trade show, for example.
Yeah, and it starts with a dragon, but obviously that could go way further, right? The digital side, I mean, imagine being able to say, print anything. I want to print this fixture for this part, and it just pops out with that design and that printed part. So that's kind of the future of it. But from an automation standpoint, I mean, if you look at 3D printing technologies in general, they go hand in hand, right? And so when we look at all the different types of 3D printing, like FDM, it's based on a robot, right, moving around to lay down that material. Every 3D printing process has some sort of automation inherently involved. But I think the thing to remember is that automation is such a broad topic, and there's so much that goes into it. And so there are so many different ways that it can positively influence your additive manufacturing operation, right? Whether that be just automating the movement of parts or seeing, you know, like we said, the digital workflow, maybe it's automation around the quality control process. That's kind of a newer one that I'm starting to see some more development on, and I think could be more and more powerful. So maybe not a exact, you know, one answer for that, but I think what's most interesting is how many different ways it's impacting the industry overall.
Yeah, and I'm seeing the part movements as well. I'm seeing how it automates the workflow. Maybe I think another way to talk about this conversation and where additive fits in manufacturing right now is, can you share a couple sweet spots or real world stories of applications or verticals where additive manufacturing is a fit? We've kind of talked about the process of additive manufacturing. Maybe let's talk about the industries that are a sweet spot as well.
Exactly. So we were talking about how, automation fits into additive, but equally so, additive fits into automation. And so some of the sweet spots, obviously, when you think about additive, you think, well, it enables more complex geometries, right? So that's kind of a given. But really, where we see the most adoption is when there's some clear pain point in your existing approach or manufacturing approach, right? So maybe it's in terms of lightweighting. One of the key application spaces that we've seen is around end-of-arm tooling for robotics. So think about the gripper or the tool at the end of a robotic arm. So what's really critical is that this is both strong enough to move your components, but also pretty lightweight, so you're not taking up the load of your robot arm. So we've seen a lot of really creative optimized parts that have been 3D printed instead of maybe a traditional machined or off the shelf, maybe 80-20 strut kind of a design, right? That is usually quite bulky and honestly, typically overspecced for really what it needs to be.
We'll be right back, right after a word from our sponsor.
Are you stressed out by last-minute changes in panel building? Maybe you've encountered this scenario. Your customer has requested control cabinets from you and the delivery date is set. You use CAD to create the schematics, you've got your bill of materials, purchasing buys all the components, and then bam, your customer submits last minute changes and you're stuck going backwards to make those changes. If you've been in this situation before, then you need to check out ePlan. ePlan goes beyond your typical CAD software and is ideal for electrical engineering. You can easily integrate component data from hundreds of manufacturers and enter changes just once and apply those changes to the entire project, freeing up your time to take on more important tasks and more customers. You can learn more by going to manufacturinghappyhour.com/eplan and make sure to catch our full-length interview with them in episode 132, where we talk panel design, apprenticeships, and manufacturing the world over. And now, back to today's episode.
What would you say is one of your big bets for additive manufacturing in the next 2 to 3 years? Where you see it going? Reflecting on your career and your work in this area so far, what do you think we're going to be talking about 2 to 3 years from now? You just gave the end of arm tooling example. If you had to take a peek into the future as best you can, what do you think people should be preparing for at this point?
Yeah, it's a good question. And there's probably a couple areas. I do think this kind of whole industrial segment is one of those areas where we're really only scratching the surface, right? And you'll notice maybe in different segments like in medical or consumer, there's some more interest because, oh, these parts look cool and or these parts can achieve something unique. But I think there's so much potential in this kind of robotics and automation space, but it's difficult to get to the right people and have that shift in mindset from the manufacturing standpoint. But to give you some examples, if we just talk about production lines, for example, we have an example I've seen from L'Oreal where they, you know, move mascara products along a production line, and they were using 3D printing for the pucks or the little fixtures on that production line. And it was really effective for them because they were able to optimize the part, use way less material, lightweight the parts. And then every time they have a product change or a line changeover, it was really quick and easy to change those out to the next one. And in this world, we're seeing, you know, mass production turn into a more rapidly changing environment where those product changeovers happen more and more frequently. So a lot of companies need this higher level of agility, right? This higher level of flexibility. And how do you do that with the same old manufacturing methods? So we're seeing a lot of kind of production line applications like that, and also in the robotics space. So if you go to any robotics show, I guarantee you, go walk up to almost any booth, there will be 3D printed parts there. Mm-hmm. And it's a funny thing because I've, you know, worked a booth at a robotics show before, had people come up to me who knew basically very little about 3D printing. And then I walked around the show and everyone doing some sort of innovation in robotics is already using 3D printing. Mm-hmm. Just because they understand, like, if I need to prototype something fast, I'm going to 3D print it. If I need to lightweight a part, use topology optimization, do something really creative with a design, I'm going to use 3D printing. And all of that stuff is really, really critical for robotics, which is also an industry that's, I'm sure, as you know, exploding all over the world. So I think we'll see, at the same time that robotics is increasing, we'll see additive manufacturing alongside it.
Yeah, I think one of the, where at least where I see the biggest opportunity is how people talk about, you know, making the part isn't the hardest part in manufacturing in general. It's making the machine that makes the machine. So especially if you think of like an automotive assembly line, it takes a lot of work to retrofit that to make a new model car, the next model car. And 3D printing, when it's done at an industrial scale, is one of those primary tools that allows you to start doing more flexible manufacturing. At least that's my simplified way of looking at the manufacturing world and why it is so critical for finding the right fit for it right now.
Right, exactly. And I've even, you know, done a poll with people where I was like, okay, what is your most, your top priority right now for manufacturing? And, you know, instead of cost, a lot of people said it was flexibility, right? Mm-hmm. So what are these ways that we can inject more flexibility in your supply chain, being able to print on demand instead of ordering off the shelf parts? You know, what happens when your design changes and you need to make a quick, you know, adjustment to that design, right? So these are all reasons that would lead someone more towards additive manufacturing.
Yeah. One other thing you said earlier, I do want to make sure I ask you about is you mentioned that sometimes we're just not talking to the right people or getting to the right person is hard. So who is the right person to make decisions around bringing more additive manufacturing into one's manufacturing process?
And this is the challenging part because it needs to be both bottoms up and tops down. So you need typically a champion, right? So this is usually an engineer, someone who is near the design. They understand the benefits, right? They know what to do with additive manufacturing. They're really there to drive it. But at the same time, especially if you're in a big company, you need someone higher up, you know, a CTO, someone to basically give that guidance, provide that direction to say, we're going to start using additive manufacturing more. Or maybe it's an adjacent goal. Maybe it's something like we're going to look at ways to save cost or be more sustainable, right? As long as you can tie it to some other goal that your leadership is, you know, telling you as a company, then that's going to help you get ahead and kind of move forward with using additive manufacturing. I think that's why it's been such a challenge, because you kind of have to approach it from multiple angles. You have to inform both the CEO, you know, the people at the top, but you have to also make sure all the engineers, all the designers know how to use it, know the benefits, know how to design for it, and can also spread that message internally.
Is there, you probably can't share a specific company, but is there like a set of companies in an industry that's starting to get it more than others where, you know, the CTOs, the CEOs are talking and, you know, whatever that industry is, I'm curious, is there one that's maybe further ahead than other people that could be at that same level right now?
It's a good question. I would say there are pockets where it's taking off in each industry. So one pocket I'll mention is definitely orthotics and prosthetics, O&P. So this is an area where it's really clear that there's a benefit of using additive, right? Because anything that has to do with a medical application where there's a patient involved, ideally the best solution is customized for that patient. So how do you make the best fitting prosthetic? You 3D print it, right? That's going to provide the best results, the most comfort. And so we're seeing this take off, again, relatively small, but it's growing pretty rapidly. On the opposite end of the spectrum, I also will just call out the automotive industry in general, because this is obviously a big industry. There's a lot of, you know, rules and regulations in place, and they really want to make sure that everything is of the top quality, which absolutely makes sense. So it's going to take a little bit longer to kind of, you know, get the additive manufacturing parts in onto vehicles, but we're already seeing that happen, right? There's already, you know, GM's putting parts, additively manufactured parts on cars. We're seeing it, you know, for a variety of parts. Some that are just simple little brackets inside the vehicle, But they're also kind of pushing the limits to say, okay, how can we really achieve a high level of cosmetic finish with additive parts so that we can use them for kind of customized accessories in your vehicle, right? If I want a custom cup holder or panel in the car, I want it a different texture or a different style, right? You can start to enable those things with additive manufacturing since it's much more flexible in that way.
Yeah, and we're seeing plenty of disruption in the automotive world. We have been for the past decade. So
yes,
I like that you mentioned the pockets. Certainly prosthetics has been a spot in the med world where there seems to be a natural fit for it. And people have jumped on board very quickly. I'm excited to see where things go. I'm also excited because we've got to close out here at Victoria Bar, and we're going to go back to your career one more time before this is done. We're going to grab our passports, fly overseas to Spain, because I mentioned it right at the very start of the interview. You spent a lot of time in Portland, but you're currently in Spain. So tell us how you got there, what you're focused on now, and of course, what you're loving about being in Spain as well.
Yes, this is all true. So I actually changed over to product management last May, and I did that knowing that it would also relocate me to Barcelona. So I will say I was very excited about this prospect. I was looking for an opportunity that would bring me abroad because I always had that goal of being able to work and live abroad. So I'm very excited about this opportunity. I've been traveling a lot, so it's been a little tiring, but I am really loving it here so far. It's tough to kind of get settled in, but I am starting to figure out, you know, the bars, the restaurants, the different social networks and everything. I think as you can probably relate to, maybe the most obvious benefit is the weather is much better over here than in Portland, I have to say.
Yes, yes. And presumably this round of our conversation has taken place over some tapas right after getting to see some nice Gaudi architecture.
Exactly.
Walking down. What's the main road there in Barcelona?
Ramblas,
that's right.
Touristy area. Yes, we can have a wine. We can take
Spain
a walk.
Spain is on my list of spots I need to get back to. I haven't been since 2010 when I did like a little, you know, flash trip around Europe. So it was very much, you know, experience a little bit here, a little bit there. But it is a lovely part of the world that is very high on the top of my list for where I'll be going for maybe some holiday time in the near future. What's one thing you've learned so far working abroad that maybe you didn't expect to learn when you originally went to Spain? Certainly you were expecting some new things, maybe expecting some culture shock, but I'm curious about something that may have surprised you that you didn't expect.
This is a good question. Yeah, I've been learning a lot of little things around the difficulty of moving to a different country. And I have to recommend that if you're going to do it, then have it organized through your company, because that certainly made it a lot easier. But it's funny, maybe I'll frame this a little bit differently than how you asked it. One of my favorite things that I've learned as I've switched between different groups and even different geographies is it's always funny to see what the culture is in that group. And there's always a group to them that they view as the unknown group, right? Where it's like, I don't know what's going on over there, right? How does that team work? And so what I've really enjoyed is kind of learning what that is across the way. And then hopefully helping make connections so people better understand what's going on in the different teams. Because it's easy to get kind of caught in your own little, world when you don't get that chance to kind of explore, meet different teams and see what's happening.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about how your career evolves over in Spain and wherever your journey should take you in the future. You know, as we get here to the end of the conversation, is there anything we didn't cover about your career, about additive manufacturing, or about your interests? You said you're a multi-interested individual. Is there something you wish we would have talked about? And this is manufacturing happy hour. It does not necessarily need to be manufacturing related per se.
Well, lots of things. I mean, you should know that I love to dance and I think everyone should dance. Okay, so I'll put that out there. But yeah, but in all seriousness, I'll also say just the one other thing I would say about additive manufacturing. A lot of people think it's supposed to be this kind of magic button that I just put a part in and then a perfect part comes out. And really, we should think about it as another manufacturing process, right? It's another tool to put in your toolbox. It's great when paired with traditional manufacturing techniques. And I've seen the most compelling and innovative outcomes when that happens, when someone's taking more of a hybrid approach. So I want to make that clear because I think people have a lot of different misconceptions about additive manufacturing, and it's really not here to replace traditional manufacturing. It's here to augment it so you can create better end results.
Certainly. Well, you did mention something that I obviously have to ask about. What style of dance? Is there a Spanish influence to your dancing style as well? I'm a salsa dancer from back in the day, but it's been a very long time.
Well, maybe if you come out here, you can practice some more. But I would love to take salsa, bachata, flamenco. It's all on my list. I've mostly done belly dance, some hip hop, different club styles, whacking, so really across the board. But
all right.
Now I'm mostly, I would describe it as a noodle in the wind, I think.
All right. Well, across the board in dancing styles, across the board going overseas. Liz, it's been great learning about your career today. I appreciate the overview on additive manufacturing, where you see it going. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to jump on Manufacturing Happy Hour.
Of course. Thank you so much.
Hey, folks, thank you for listening. If you want to learn more, make sure to head to the show notes page, manufacturinghappyhour.com/182. Of course, that's where you can also access links to the different watering holes we mentioned in this episode. I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to getting back out to Portland, Oregon. It's been a while, and I'm also looking forward to going to Automate. You know, I told you there was a bit of an Automate connection between myself and Liz, and that was actually learned that Liz had attended in 2023 with the specific objective to learn more about areas where robotics and automation could make an impact in her own 3D printing work, which I thought was just a fantastic case. If you are someone that is trying to figure out, hey, I want to automate this process, or hey, this part of my business I think could leverage robotics, well, that's why you got to go to Automate. Register by going to manufacturinghappyhour.com/automate2024, May 6th through 9th, Chicago, Illinois. Going to be a great time, as is the Manufacturing Happy Hour party that I'm throwing with Jake Hall. It's got a little bit of a baseball theme to it. We're calling it Extra Innings. That's our collaborative event. It's going from 7 to 10 p.m. on Tuesday, May 7th at the brand new Guinness Open Gate Brewery in Chicago's West Loop. Can't wait for that. Again, register for Automate, register for an Automate live interview. There's a ton going on. We hope to see you soon in Chicago. I also want to give a shout out to Gray Solutions as well as ePlan for sponsoring today's episode. And of course, I want to thank you. I know I said it at the start of this outro, but you can never say it too much. So hey, stay innovative, stay thirsty. I appreciate you sticking around. Catch you again next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Manufacturing Happy Hour, powered by the Industrial Network.